I'm going to ask everybody to be respectful. If I see that this meeting is interrupted, where we cannot conduct this meeting, I will ask the State Patrol to have you removed on both sides. And with that said, I made a promise to Senator Peterson that we'd have an hour's worth of questioning. And I know right now it's 1:34. We'll come back because we are up against the Natural Resources Committee meeting, which there's some people at around this table that are members of that. We will come back at 4 p.m. and whatever that, right now, be another half hour worth of questioning if you would like to. That's the plans right now. And I would just ask Senator Bisignano, I know that you have something you want to say, and I open the floor to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My issue that I want to raise has nothing to do with the bill. It has to do with the limitations. And as a senator, and you're all friends and colleagues, it's unprecedented in the Senate that we limit debate. And it's unprecedented that we restrict times to air fully the issue before us. I know it happened in the subcommittee and created a great deal of unhappiness, and now we're in the full committee, and it's just among us senators. So it isn't a matter of allowing everybody in this room to speak, but we've never disrespected each other to the point where we have limited the opportunity for as long as a senator wishes to speak. And I don't believe when we were in the majority that you can show an example that we've done that we've called the question, that we have put a time certain. And I think that every senator on this committee should have the right to speak as long as they wish on an issue that's so important, obviously, to so many people in the state of Iowa. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I just want to respond to Senator Bisignano. I appreciate your input. I did not know what the intention of the minority party was, if they were going to come back or caucus for a longer time. Senate tradition is we have always had 1 hour time allotment for our meetings, and I am going to certainly allow 1 hour, but after 1 hour of questions, I'm going to wrap it up and ask for closing comments, and then we'll vote on the bill. So thank you. So with that, I would open up the floor to Senator Sinclair for opening comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your subcommittee of Sinclair, Peterson, and Schultz met on January 10th to discuss Senate File 2, with Sinclair and Schultz recommending passage. Am I in order on the bill?
Yes, you are.
Colleagues in the Senate, ladies and gentlemen here to observe these proceedings, I'd like to bring before you Senate File 2, a bill for the establishment of a state family planning services program. The program outlined by this bill will replace the current Medicaid Family Planning Network waiver. The change makes Iowa's family planning services ostensibly state-funded, though it is possible federal money will still be used through a block grant, which allows the state more discretion in how the money is spent than through Medicaid. This change will allow Iowa to restrict government funding to family planning services away from organizations that perform abortions that are not medically necessary. The bill directs DHS, the Department of Human Services, to discontinue the Medicaid Family Planning Network waiver effective July 1, 2017, and instead establish a state family planning services program. The program is to replicate eligibility and other requirements exactly as the waiver and distribute funds in a manner that continues access to family planning services. However, none of the funds are to be distributed to any entity that performs abortions or that maintains or operates a facility where abortions are performed. The bill specifies that this prohibition includes funds for indirect costs or expenses, overhead, employee salaries, rent, telephone, other utilities related to providing abortions. Please note, colleagues, that for the purpose of this bill, abortion does not include, one, the treatment for a physical disorder or physical injury or physical illness, including a life-endangering physical condition caused by or arising from the pregnancy itself, that would, as certified by a physician, place the woman in danger of death. Additionally, an abortion does not include treatment of a woman for a spontaneous abortion, commonly known as a miscarriage, when not all of the products of human conception are expelled. This bill requires DHS to submit an annual report to the governor and the General Assembly annually by January 1, listing any entities that received program funds that are in the lowest position of priority as described as non-public entities that provide family planning services but do not provide required primary health care services as defined in federal law, as well as the amount and type of those funds received by such entities during the preceding year. The report is also to include a detailed explanation of how DHS determined that distribution of program funds to such an entity was necessary to prevent severe limitation or elimination of access to family planning services in the region of the state where the entity is located. I will tell you, Senator, I've received many comments and I have read them. Many Iowans have brought questions to me, concerns regarding how this will affect women's reproductive health, and I have considered them all, including the ones that called me names and shamed me and informed me that I had a special place in hell. In response to those concerns, I reached out to the executive branch and received guidance from the Department of Human Services, who will be the agency tasked with administering the new state family planning services program. First, this bill will not completely eliminate tax funding of Planned Parenthood in the state of Iowa, as incorrectly reported and brought to our attention. This bill deals specifically and only with the Medicaid Family Planning Network waiver, which utilizes state tax dollars as well. It does not address the Medicaid Title X program, nor the Teen Pregnancy and Sex Education Grant programs. These are fully federally funded programs totaling approximately $1.5 million with different funding requirements that we do not regulate. Second, this bill will not eliminate family planning funding for services for needy Iowa women. Last year, $2.6 million approximately was spent using a combination of both state and federal monies. This bill would actually transition the same requirements for covering these women for birth control, for pap tests, for STI tests, all the same services as currently covered, and actually expand the amount committed to the purpose to well over $3 million, as it is anticipated that the increased access to providers will actually increase the usage of the program. Next, this bill does not change laws requiring abortion. This bill does not change any laws regarding abortion. Currently, tax funding cannot be used to cover elective abortions. There will be no related changes to that. The bill does not limit or infringe the legal option of a woman to seek an abortion. It is, in fact, a measured attempt to balance the reproductive health care needs of Iowa's working poor with the objections of the taxpayers who oppose tangibly subsidizing that option through public support of shared facilities. Another misconception is that family planning services will be provided by people who are unqualified to do the job. Please note, if you read the bill, you will know there is zero allowance in this bill for allowing family planning services to be provided by anyone other than trained medical providers. The added benefit is that those healthcare services will be, in many cases, provided by people also qualified to address the woman's overall health and identify needs that may currently go unnoticed. The positive implications of that alone are enough to garner support for Senate File 2. It has been stated that 80,000 Iowa women will lose access to healthcare, and I am sorry, but that statement is false. DHS confirmed to me that approximately this past year, 12,000 individuals received care under the current family planning system. That is a number confirmed by DHS, 12,000 individuals. To quote my colleague, Senator Charles Schneider, that's not a political statement, that's just math. Some question has been raised about the process of prioritizing providers and the impact of a huge influx of patients to the first-tier providers. And while on the surface that could be of concern, DHS guidance on the matter quickly alleviates any concern you might have. To quote directly from the proposal for implementation of the state family planning system, And again, I quote, the $3,383,880 funding level is expected to fully fund the program. Prioritization will only be needed if funding is exhausted. To put it simply, all Medicaid-approved providers will be able to provide care to patients, and the expanded group of providers will ensure that the first-tier providers are not overwhelmed, nor will it cause a backlog in service. A final concern brought to my attention was that DHS would be unable to implement the program by the date provided in the bill, July 1. Upon request for information, DHS guidance rejects that notion. They will, in fact, utilize their already existing delivery model, the one they currently use. They will use the same memorandum of understanding process with providers as they have in the past. They will operate under the same qualifying process for patient access that currently exists. In short, according to their own documentation, and I quote, the SFPSP, State Family Planning Services Program, will improve access to eligibility for family planning and family planning related services and increase the number of low-income people receiving family planning and family planning related services throughout Iowa. I'd like to share just some final thoughts, if I could, in my opening statements here regarding Senate File 2 before I conclude. There are zero Planned Parenthood clinics located in Senate District 14. And I would suggest that that is true for many other rural districts in the state of Iowa as well. So that means that anyone I represent would have to drive to access one of those clinics. They're all located in urban areas, to access their needed services under the existing system. Transitioning to the state option will allow any Medicaid waiver eligible clinic that doesn't provide elective abortions in conjunction with private, nonprofit family planning facilities to provide the same services right where our sisters and our daughters and our mothers live. The increased access in both facilities and scope of service is why I'm such an advocate for this transition. This plan provides a higher level of funding than is currently allocated. The same rules for qualifying stand. The only thing that changes is that any provider who also provides abortion will be excluded from eligibility. If Planned Parenthood or any other abortion provider wishes to continue to receive state family planning dollars, they could easily discontinue offering abortions, which I'm advised is only about 2.5% of their activity. Please know women will not go without exams or care or screenings. They'll just be able to receive those services right where they live and in conjunction with their broader health care needs. That concludes my opening statement, Senator, and I will allow the rest of the body to have discussion.
And Senator Sinclair, I need the committee report, please. At this time, is there any discussion? Okay, so Senator Taylor. Senator Peterson. Okay, I'll call on Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to thank you for having this hearing, and I'd like to say something about Senator Sinclair's presentation. I wish that would have happened at subcommittee. I was there, and there was no explanation, and that's where these explanations should have been, was at the subcommittee level. But I'm glad you brought them to the at least to the committee meeting. And I thank you for that. As the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, you're well aware I assigned this subcommittee bill to Senator Peterson. And at that subcommittee meeting, she really didn't get a chance to express her opinions or ask any questions. As I said, I was there too. And I know she had several questions, and so at this time I'm going to reserve my right as a ranking member to making any or to having any questions at this point. I'm going to defer those to Senator Peterson at this time.
Senator Peterson, you're in order.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 2 is bad for Iowa women and families. It will create more unintended pregnancies, more high-risk pregnancies and cost Iowa taxpayers more. Iowans don't support it. We should listen to them and reject Senate File 2. Last week, Senator Sinclair held a 25-minute subcommittee on Senate File 2. Hundreds of Iowans came to the State House that day to make their voices heard about their opposition to Senate File 2, which will gut Iowa's family planning network. Senator Sinclair cut off their testimony after 25 minutes. Senators were not allowed time to ask questions about the bill or provide facts about the Iowa Family Planning Network. I have served in the Iowa legislature for 17 years. I have never seen a subcommittee conducted that way. I stayed for nearly an hour after the meeting to listen to Iowans and make sure their stories were heard. It's unfortunate that not one of the 29 Republican sponsors of the bill stuck around to hear what Iowans have to say about it. Apparently, 28 Republican men and one Republican woman know what's best for women's health care. I appreciate everyone who came forward to advocate against Senate File 2 to help protect the health of our sisters and brothers living in Iowa. Here's what I've learned about Senate File 2. Senate File 2 guts the Iowa Family Planning Network, a program that has helped more than 80,000 Iowa women and men access family planning services across our state since the program began in 2006. That number is accurate. We know the Iowa Family Planning Waiver works. It has helped reduce abortion and Medicaid expenses in our state. The Iowa Family Planning Network is inexpensive for taxpayers. Iowa's Family Planning Network program has saved Iowa taxpayers millions of dollars. We should not mess with a program that works. Let's look at the facts. The Iowa Family Planning Network works. An evaluation of the program by the University of Iowa Public Policy Center in May of 2016 showed the family planning waiver has increased the number of women receiving family planning services within the Medicaid program. Medicaid costs for deliveries and birth and first years of life have declined by nearly $345 million since the program began. Very conservative estimates of a net Medicaid savings are more than $265 million. The Iowa Family Planning Network saves Iowa taxpayers money. For every 10 cents Iowa taxpayers invest in the program, we get an additional 90 cents from the federal government to pay for the program. Iowans invest roughly $300,000 in this program every year. When you add the federal dollars to the investment, we get more than $3 million in preventative health services for Iowa women and men throughout the state. The University of Iowa study shows Iowa taxpayers have saved nearly $3.40 for every dollar they invested in the Iowa Family Planning Network. Under Senate File 2, Iowa will walk away from federal funds that go to serve the Iowa Family Planning Network. The new program, devised by 8 men and 1 woman in the Senate, none of whom have a medical degree, will put the entire cost of the program on the backs of Iowa taxpayers. It's also important to note there will be absolutely no funds in Senate File 2, the bill before us today. There are no funds in this bill going toward the new program. The current Iowa Family Program has reduced unintended pregnancies and abortions. Senate Republicans want to scrap the successful program and force Iowa taxpayers to spend 10 times the money just to exclude Planned Parenthood from providing care to Iowa women and men. Senate File 2 does more than just defund Planned Parenthood. Under the Republican plan, Senate File 2 completely eliminates the Iowa Family Planning Network and replaces it with a state-run program that doesn't exist right now and doesn't have a guaranteed funding stream to make it happen. It's important to remember the Iowa Family Planning Network has never funded abortions. The Iowa Family Planning Network has been successful in preventing abortions and improving birth outcomes. when you make it harder for Iowans to access family planning services, you increase the number of unintended pregnancies. Gutting the Iowa Family Planning Network will cause more unintended pregnancies and abortions. Senate File 2 puts politicians in charge of women's health care, and that is dangerous. We've been told a new state program will offer more providers and give women more options. That simply is not true. Senate File 2 does not give women more options for health care. In fact, it will force thousands of women to leave a provider they've chosen and go to a provider selected by 29 politicians. Let's remember, the women participating in this program are not participating in the program for abortions. It's the absolute opposite. These women are participating in the Iowa Family Planning Network to take care of their bodies and to prevent unintended pregnancies and abortions. Yet now, a group of 28 politicians, 28 of whom have never gotten completely undressed, put on a paper gown, and put their feet in a stirrups for a pap smear, are telling women that they know what's best for them. This is small government at work at the Iowa State House this year. Iowans have a right to be concerned about this legislation. Iowa taxpayers have every right to be angry that we will be giving up millions of dollars in federal funding to start another government program that will be paid for fully on the backs of Iowa taxpayers. Iowans who worry about health and safety of our children, people with mental disabilities and illness, should be piping mad that this program will take away funds that should have been going to their services. To the thousands of Iowa women who may lose their health care coverage and family planning coverage when Republicans repeal Obamacare, Senate File 2 is not prepared to add you to the program. You will be out of luck when your care falls away with the repeal of Obamacare, because this is a first-come, first-served birth control program. If we keep the current system that actually works, the program would be able to include women if they lose their family planning services because of Obamacare repeal at a very, very small cost to Iowa taxpayers. And God forbid the Zika virus or other outbreak affects Iowa. The size of the program will not increase to keep up with the demand for family planning services as it would under our existing Iowa family planning waiver. Bottom line, this bill is dangerous. It endangers the health of thousands of Iowa women. This bill will cost Iowa taxpayers more money. Under the bill, Iowa women will have fewer options for their health care, not more. It decreases access. 28 men and one Republican woman will tell women where they can and cannot go for their care. While Republicans claim this is a mandate from Iowans, they are ignoring the facts. Let's remember, 74% of Iowans support public funding for Planned Parenthood for family planning services. This new program only offers first-come, first-serve birth control. Who wants to come to a state that treats women like that? Senate Republicans got rid of the Economic Development Committee after taking control of the Iowa Senate. They said economic development should be a part of every committee's work. So let me say this. Senate File 2 is a step in the wrong direction. Gutting the Iowa Family Planning Network is not going to help our state and improve its ranking of dead last when it comes to female entrepreneurs. Why would we gut the Iowa Family Planning Network? The program works. It saves taxpayers millions of dollars. It has helped reduce abortions and Medicaid. We shouldn't mess with it. Now, I will yield my time for questions. I know there's other senators who want to speak, but I do have a series of questions that I have about the legislation. Thank you.
Senator Kennedy, you are in order.
Thank you, Chairman. I just want to look at a different perspective and something that I came to know and how I came to know Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood, in my career in law enforcement, was always there supporting me in my investigations. I did in the time that I was investigations, a large number of sexual assault investigations, and they were always there assisting us with the victims of those assaults. In 2006, when I first began working on human trafficking cases, Planned Parenthood was one of the first, if not the first, organization that came to me and said, how can we help you? What can we do? How can we treat these victims? How do we get education out so people know that this is going on in this state? It is very hard for me to now go back and tell those people that stepped up to help me that I cannot step up to help them, and I will not do that. Thank you.
Okay, I'll call on Senator Schultz. You're in order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen here, senators. I'd like to also have a little bit of a separate view. I noticed the talking points have changed just a little bit. River to River is a radio show that a few of us did here just yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I am glad to see, originally the talking points were that there was going to be nothing. There was no admission that there was a program going to be formed. Now today I am glad that we are admitting that there is a program going to be formed. If you go through the process, you find that it is an almost identical program. The admission, the application, the providers applying to be vendors are almost identical. What's also actually identical that I've learned through this process is that list of providers. See, yesterday on River to River, it was, as we talked around, we had pros and cons on this bill, and it was an interesting open conversation. I really did enjoy our time on that. But Planned Parenthood themselves admitted that there are hundreds of non-abortion providing vendors who are currently in this program. Each and every one of them is going to move over to the new program. Each of them is available. They're already providing these services to the 80,000 women that you are mentioning. But we're also going to find that there's going to be other vendors out in more rural areas out there, the areas that we serve, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm in full faith that we're going to be better served. If we move away from allowing abortion providers to have this, because I do have a belief that in the bigger picture, abortion providers have a system of finding money, finding tax dollars that some of our community health centers don't have. I think that could be pointed out that in 2015, $1.5 million of the total $3.8 million spent went to Planned Parenthood themselves. I believe they have an insight on this money, that they have the experience to try to find this funding, where the rest of the community is not trying to be a magnet for tax dollars. While we're talking about that area, I think we do have a fiduciary duty. We have a duty to our taxpayers to make sure that their dollars are being spent properly, that our dollars are being spent efficiently. And we have Planned Parenthood actually undergoing right now a $28 million Medicaid fraud investigation. This was brought forward by a 17-year veteran of Planned Parenthood, in fact, one of their clinic directors. On River to River the other day, this was portrayed as a disgruntled employee. But actually, I think what we find is that this is somebody who was fired because when telemed abortions became the latest effort to try to maximize the number of abortions in Iowa, she couldn't do it. She saw the procedure. She saw how women were being treated and being sent home without medical care, and she couldn't do it anymore. She was fired. When she tried to tell the world what was happening, she was offered a massive non-disclosure offer. She turned it down. She couldn't. So she's shedding light on the fact that we have a vendor for our Medicaid system who is actually bilking the taxpayer. I believe this is happening much wider. I believe that Medicaid is probably suffering under this. I believe we're going to end up with a better, more efficient program that actually pays for more services, because all the services will actually be performed if they're billed, and they will not be overbilled if they were performed. So, ladies and gentlemen, the services will not be produced. We can remove at least one bad actor out of this process and move toward our community providers who I can look in the eye, that I can walk in and see. And I'd like to point out the fact this bill does not have any dollar signs in it. It's because it's not an appropriations bill. However, the same people who are putting this bill forward, the Senate Republicans, are also in charge of the Senate appropriations process. The dollars are going to be there. This is not going to be allowed to fail. This is going to be a successful program. And ladies and gentlemen, I would ask that we support it and vote this out of committee today. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Snyder, you're in order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to mention that I've heard from a lot of people on this issue on both sides of it, as I know many of us have as senators. This is a program that I do believe will work well for Iowa and for Iowa women. When you look at the list of providers and in the areas where those providers are located, to me, it appears as though more women are going to have more options in more parts of the state. And that can mean a lot for rural women who may have to otherwise take time out of their day to travel somewhere. That's gas money, that might be time off from work. It doesn't have to be that way. It can be more convenient, and that's what this bill does. I know there are a lot of people who I've talked to who disagree with that and who disagree strongly. I've tried to respond to every email correspondence that I've gotten, anyone who's come to me in the Capitol. When I've been in the chamber, I've spent time with them, and I want to thank them for their thoughtful and their respectful conversations that I've had with them. I've appreciated it. They pointed out some things that might be unintended consequences, and those might be true, and I think we need to realize that as we move forward in this new program, and if that does turn out to be the case, we need to be prepared to make some changes. But I do believe this will ultimately be a good thing for Iowa, and the women in my family believe that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, it is 1:55 right now. As I mentioned earlier, I am going to reconvene this meeting at 4 p.m., and we will have ample time for you to ask questions and any other senators that want to ask questions. I want to compliment everyone in this room for their behavior, and I need a motion to arise. So we will be back at 4 p.m. in this room. If you want to stay in this, what? Oh, we're recessing. Okay, excuse me. Thank you. Motion made by Shipley. We'll see you at 4 p.m.